The views expressed on this program are the views of the individual broadcaster and by no means reflect the view of Wesleyan University or the WESU management. Hello, and welcome to Reasonably Catholic, Keeping the Faith, a progressive-minded radio show about faith and action, coming to you from Wesleyan University's WESU, 88.1 FM, Middletown, and WESUFM.org, providing community radio that matters. I'm Maria Johnson. Today, a conversation across the miles with three activists for change in the church during a break in a meeting in Slovakia of the International Church Reform Network. They are Kate McElwee, Executive Director of the Rome-based Women's Ordination Conference, Deb Rose Milovec, Executive Director of Future Church, and Redemptorist Father Tony Flannery, who's been banned from priestly ministry for voicing his liberal views on issues such as women priests, homosexuality, and contraception. All three have been stimulating previous guests on Reasonably Catholic. They'll pass the phone to one another to share their latest insights, including the launch of a new parish-based effort called Listening to Women. Listening to women, I know, what a concept. As Father Tony explains it, priests are trained to listen to people's problems, but they're not used to being challenged. But with the average age of priests in Ireland hovering around 71 years old, it's change or die, he says. Back in a moment with Kate, then Deb and Father Tony. But first, a big thank you to those of you who donated during WESU's Spring Pledge Drive. We made our goal, thanks to you.
Many dogs and cats spend endless days indoors staring at the wall, living for the moment when you will come home and tell them you love them, take them out, and make a fuss over them. Dogs and cats need physical exercise and mental stimulation, things to do and think about in order to be healthy and happy. Please set time aside for them and give them a real life and real love. For more information, please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals at 757-622-PETA. Or helpinganimals.com. That's helpinganimals.com.
Welcome, Kate, Deb, and Father Tony.
Thanks for having us.
You are away from your usual stomping grounds, Kate.
We're in Slovakia, which is about 25 kilometers outside of Bratislava.
Okay. And you're there for a meeting of the International Church Reform Network, which I read is just loaded with progressive-minded Catholic organizations. Are there non-Catholics involved as well, or is this purely for reform of the Catholic Church?
So this is the fourth gathering of the International Church Reform Network, which founded in 2013. And so we have this incredible opportunity to be part of to learn about the underground church in Slovakia. So our hosts here have brought together Lutheran theologians, Catholic theologians, experts in the early underground church here. So we're really blessed to be part of to be in this location and to really learn about the underground church here in Slovakia.
Wow, I love this underground church. Do we have one of those in the States?
Well, I think this is really referring to the church under the communist regime. So there was a movement to really preserve the sacraments, and so there were secret ordinations that happened. So we're learning more and more about this. So we have our own kind of totalitarianism in the United States, but not quite the same as what was happening in Czechoslovakia.
Oh, that's very well put. You're right. So, okay, I get it. It's not about an underground women's ordination church. It's more really about the Catholic Church surviving the regime.
Remarkably, there were women who were ordained as part of this underground church. So it's really incredible. There are still living women who were ordained in this underground movement. So we're learning about that as well.
When was that?
There's a woman who was ordained in 1970 in the underground church.
Wow.
And then there's... But none of these women have official documents, so it's really a conundrum today, and most of these women stay out of the public eye and are very private about what happened and their ordination.
Wait a minute, hold on. What kind of official documents are required? What do you mean, to even live there?
Just a record of what happened, of the ordination process that happened to them. Those records don't exist for these women.
I see. And is this meeting and your participation in it related to this new Listening to Women effort?
So the Listening to Women project really was born out of several years of this meeting and these colleagues coming together. But really, in 2016 in Chicago, it came to the group, it really came out of our conversations that the voices of women were not being heard and the experiences of women in churches were not being heard or embraced in constructive ways, even within Reform communities. So this group is a really a unique collection of priests associations and priests and Reform organizations and leaders. So this is a special opportunity for us to come together and use the resources that we have as grassroots movements, but also as priest movements, to better listen to the voices of women. So the guiding thought here is that until all voices are heard in the church, we really can't see where the Holy Spirit is moving. So this group has devised surveys for women to organize in their parish communities and faith communities to really ask questions about when they've been heard or silenced, how the church can better respond to the pastoral needs of women.
Okay, so many questions. First of all, this is purely a Catholic project. When we talk about church reform, we're talking about the Catholic Church here, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And how many people are attending the meeting?
This meeting is quite large. I think there's more than 50 people from, I would say, more than 15 or 16, even more countries represented.
Wow.
So it's a really global movement.
And there are some priests who are taking part.
Yep, there's several priests and several representatives from priest associations around the world.
Are they risking anything by being there?
You know, it really depends on their circumstances. A lot of these priests have already taken great risks in their careers to be advocates for women or for the LGBT community. So many of the priests who are with us are holding the consequences of some of their prophetic action.
Yes, and I guess we'll talk to Father Tony about what he sacrificed to advance the cause of full equality for women in the church. So how long have you been there?
The meeting started yesterday afternoon, and so we spend a lot of our time together really just learning the history of the Slovakian church in Czechoslovakia, and then we'll sort of move together into working groups with the themes that emerge. So that will include the project of listening to women.
It's a three-day conference?
It's from Monday till Friday.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
I know you've only just arrived really yesterday, and you've learned about this underground church. Is there anything else that comes out of it that kind of excites you or interests you so far?
It's been a really incredible plate so far. It's been really educational, and what I think is the most surprising is that how relevant what was happening in Czechoslovakia is to the Reform movement today. We've been discussing different theologies. The one theme that came out is called the theology of mishap, which is really a need for the church to deal with difficulty and deal with problems and really refuse to sort of go underground and with its head in the sand.
Huh.
Instead really confront the challenges of society today. So those themes, I mean, are so relevant to what we're working with today, but also, you know, we're born out of this really intense time in Czechoslovakia.
Okay. And I'm just curious, because it's been in the news, I think, just yesterday. Does Pope Francis's name come up in relation to Chile? I'm just thinking of not sticking our heads in the sand, not, you know, ignoring mishaps, if you will.
Talking Certainly, we haven't talked about Pope Francis that much at this meeting yet, but we do refer to the hierarchy at large and the institutional church. So there is, you know, some sense that the local church or the parish experience is dying or is, you know, coming into a different form, but the institutional structures that we are trying to transform as well are still strong and replicating. So we do talk about the institutional church and the pull or the power of Rome that it had in different eras and different governments here, but Pope Francis hasn't actually been on the agenda yet.
That's funny. Talk a little bit, Kate, about listening to women, the genesis of the idea, and why you think it's a good way to move the ball down the field a bit.
Well, this came out of a meeting we had 2 years ago in Chicago, where it was very evident to us, even within these progressive circles, that women's voices were being pushed to the margins. And so a group of us, with priests in dialogue, came up with, what can we do? And I think the first step in whatever we can do together is to listen to one another and to dialogue. And so this project is really a step zero, really, in trying to transform our parish structures and to better assess and respond to the pastoral needs of women. So this project is really, it's supposed to encourage priests and women groups in parishes to organize and to come together with very broad questions about how can the church better respond to the pastoral needs of women and their families in different parts of their lives. And these questions are sometimes never asked of women, and also priests are not always able to ask them or think to ask them. And so in raising these questions, we're creating a mechanism that doesn't exist within the church. There is no feedback mechanism for women to offer suggestions or to really present their unique needs to the church. So this was a project that is creating spaces where there isn't one right now.
Earlier you mentioned that even within progressive-minded groups, there's a problem often or sometimes. Can you give an example of that?
Yeah, I think, not to be too specific, but I think there's times when the church reform movement is over-dominated by male voices, and I think that is a replication or a shadow of our society at large. And so this group has been very intentional in trying to bring the voices of women into these circles of reform. And so that was really, we confronted that very, very directly over the years. And so this is one of the first steps that we have devised that we can take together to better listen to the voices of women.
You know, it's just so interesting because when I think of church reform, and maybe this says something about me, the first reform I think of is women's ordination. And the idea that men are dominating the discussion of women's ordination just seems totally loopy.
Yeah, it is a bit loopy. I think the discussion is about women's ordination, but it's also about how we can be church together and how we can be equals together and how to walk this path of justice. So women's ordination is always a topic that this group discusses, but it's not necessarily the solution that we all envision as okay. The right direction to move in. So this is always a tension.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I should be glad that men are so, involved in the conversation in a way. I mean, not that they should dominate it, but...
For me, it's a special opportunity to even be invited to meetings with priests. As you know, as the executive director of the Women's Ordination Conference, I don't often get invited or included in these conversations. So that alone speaks volumes of the bravery that these priests are having,
yeah.
and the willingness to address an issue.
Okay, so now it's starting to clarify for me. These male voices that tend to dominate, they're male because they're priests, and only males can be priests. Is that it?
I think these are all symptoms of patriarchy, which exists in our society.
Oh, God. Yeah. Oh, man. Okay. Well, is there anything else you think we should know before you pass the phone to Deb?
No, I'll just pass it on to Deb.
Okay. Bye, Kate.
Okay. Thanks, Maria.
You're listening to a phone chat with church reform activists Kate McElwee of the Women's Ordination Conference, Deb Rose Milovec of Future Church, and silenced priest Father Tony Flannery about new efforts to hold the church to its own stated values. This is Reasonably Catholic, Keeping the Faith, coming to you from WESU, 88.1 FM, Middletown, providing community radio that matters. Back after this.
It's a medical breakthrough, a doctor's prescription to help prevent cancer and improve survival rates. But you don't go to the pharmacy, you go to the supermarket for fruits, vegetables, and other high-fiber vegetarian foods. Side effects may include increased energy, healthy weight loss, and lower cholesterol. For a free recipe booklet, call 866-906-WELL or visit cancerproject.org. This message brought to you by the Cancer Project, committed to preventing cancer and improving survival.
I'm Bria. Deb Rose Milovec here.
Oh, Deb. It's such a pleasure. How are you?
Thanks. I'm doing very, very well. This is so exciting to be here in Slovakia. And oh, it's like being with the heroes and sheroes of an era here, people who took enormous risks for freedom and for truth-telling. And we hear stories of people who walked books over mountainous regions so that they could deliver them to places where books were being burned. I mean, there's this, there are Charter 77. There are so many facets to this, so many learnings here, because we have these people who were incredibly courageous and driven by an idea that they had about how people should live together and how the church should be involved in that.
So I need to back up and ask you to explain. The books were about what, and why were they being burned, and what is this charter that you mentioned?
I'm not an expert. I just heard about it for the first time last night, and I've been doing some research. But as I understood it, that in Czechoslovakia, they were, the government was suppressing religion in general and traditions, and taking people's catechisms, their books away, all sorts of things were sort of taken away. And people here came across regions with books in hand and in a very covert way were exchanging bags for food. And some bags had books and the other ones had food, and they were exchanging those so that the people could hold on to their religious icons. It was tremendously important to have those symbols of their faith with them, and terribly under the radar, but overturning a kind of domination that they were experiencing from the state in terms of their own understanding of what was important for them in life. So in their belief system. So,
and what was the charter?
Fascinating. The charter, Charter 77. It was a human rights charter, and I actually had to do some research myself because I had not heard of it. But for instance, last night we heard a priest who decided to sign on, and it cost him dearly when he did. And so it was, about over 2,000 people signed it, and it really put them at odds with the communist government. And invoked ideas that were opposed to what the communists were pressing for at that time. And So these folks are local heroes and sheroes, and of course then now they're my heroes and sheroes because of some of the ways they described the suffering that they endured. So.
Well, you know, for Kate, it's just a hop, skip, and a jump from Rome to anywhere in Europe. But for you, it's a,
right.
it's pretty much a big shebang. So what is
yeah,
it about
it is.
This conference that drew you that you would leave your comfortable home back in the States to attend?
Well, I've been part of this from the beginning. So when I first came on board at Future Church, wasn't very long, and I was headed to Bregenz, Austria for the very first meeting. I'm also part of the steering committee structure. So, like any of this work, you know, Future Church has worked nationally for a very long time, and what this does, along with some other international groups like Voices of Faith that I work with, it stretches the work out to our allies in other parts of the world. And that informs our work in a particular way. I think it's very enriching for the work. And it also allows us to form partnerships like this Listening to Women Project, which is really happening across, you know, a variety of countries, because we have partners from all over the world who are interested in this, and hopefully also partners who will actually launch these Listening to Women sessions in their own parishes. Communities. So it creates another level, I would say, mm-hmm. of our ability to work together and to press for influence with those who are in the institution and in those areas where we want the institution to radically change.
So in answer to the question about your travel, it's basically just the answer is it's what you do.
It's what I do.
It's exactly. what you do.
Exactly.
So yeah. I have a feeling, knowing you just as long as I have, and typically over the phone, although we did get to meet in Union Square not so long ago in New York.
Union Square.
That was
right.
a delight.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have
for
a sure. feeling you were part of the germination of this Listening to Women seed. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so
So Kate was telling the story a little bit. What had happened was so there are a number of sort of issues that we try to address that groups have that people have decided they're interested in. So women's equality is definitely one of them in the Catholic Church. LGBTQI rights and inclusion in the Catholic Church is another. Rights and responsibilities of Catholics is another. And there's probably a few more, but those are at the top of my mind right mm-hmm. now. And so as we began to discuss this, and as Kate said, we thought maybe one of the first things, and I think to some degree this was stoked by the comment of not a priest, but of one of our members who stood up and said, you know, the time for women's ordination is not now, which, you know, is sort of often can be what we hear, you know, somebody sort of describing for women what they should and when they should work. And so part of we said, you know, the first place that we have to start to work is right within this group. And so in conversation with some of the priests that were, you know, we've grown, these are our brothers and our sisters, you know, all these years of working next to each other, we've come to know each other, you know, have many, many conversations about the things that are important to us. And so we've had lots of discussion, and in those very frank and candid discussions, some of the priests said to us, we challenged them. We said, how come you're not doing more about women's equality? Some of the priests are, like Tony Flannery has had this at the top from Ireland, has had women's equality at the top of his list for a long time, but other priests have not. And so we said, how come you're not doing more in your own organizations for women's equality? And they said, you know, quite honestly, we need someone to challenge us. And so this project was born out of that challenge that we wanted to give priests and other people who are not always used to really listening to what women want and what women need, and women exercising their agency in this church, not really willing. They still want to steer us. And so this is part of that effort to let women come into parishes, and without any boundaries. In other words, everything's on the table. We're not, you know, women's ordination is not off the table. Reproductive rights, that's not off the table. If you want to talk about that, you can talk about it. And then the priest is there as a listener, hearing the real experiences of the people within his own parish. Not what he thinks, not what he read, but what women are actually experiencing. And to allow that to, in a sense, convert and transform his own heart so that he'll have more passion for this, the issues, and this one in particular, women's equality in the church.
Okay, so I have an observation and a couple of questions. And the observation is, and far from letting priests off the hook here, I would just add to your comment about priests not really listening. I think women also, as a function of being Catholic, you know, under clericalism, are reluctant to speak. And okay, they don't have that space in which to speak, but I'm wondering if they did, if would they even know what to do in it? You know, we're not used to speaking to priests about what's really important to us.
Exactly.
This is really
creating the platform for just that. We're in a new papacy. We're with a pope who says dialogue, 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 and dialogue with, you know, boldness, dialogue, telling, be a truth teller. I mean, that's a long and short of what he's saying to us. And so this is an effort to do that. And so we've got some preliminary results back, and we do have some answers from women, and actually one priest is part of this group, but we do have. And so women are saying, you know, we want inclusive language during liturgies. 96% of our respondents so far said that. You know, they want social justice committees. They want to be women to be heading that. 72% said that. They want lay-led and lay preaching. 92% want that. They're hungry for the voices of women within the tradition. 54% said they want women deacons, and 55% said they want women's ordination. And this is just a very small sampling. One woman responded, you know, I want women preachers, I want women priests, I want women deacons, I want women bishops, I want women cardinals. they are speaking up, and this space is, we've created the language around it, a container for safe speaking, for a safe space for women to speak. And so, to the extent that we say it out loud, and the priests and those in their community make it as such, we will get, sort of authentic women's voices in this, and not everybody will want the same things, and we're going to get women who don't necessarily think those things. But so far, we've had a lot of responses along those lines.
So, Deb, I'm wondering, practically speaking, how this will be implemented. Do you envision parishes establishing listening to women groups, kind of like the way the Just Faith movement permeated?
Yep.
Okay.
Exactly. So one of the things I'm going to do, and everybody will take their part in this wherever they are, but I'm going to the Association of U.S. Catholic Priests Conference, which is the last week in June, and I will be doing a session on listening to women. I've got 225 packets that I'm taking along, passing them out to the priests, and then taking them through it and talking to them about why we need to do it and why they need to participate in it in a way as a listener, and to really hear what the experience of women are, and that their job is really to encourage women to be very honest and truthful and to speak what they have not been able to speak up until this point, at least not in parishes. And so it's really a kind of hope that we'll have something like we had in the 80s when bishops were really listening to women and priests were really listening to women in the U.S. anyway. And, we want this to go worldwide. So we're hoping that, these packets can go into other places, other countries, and that, it's a simple process, but it creates the beginning of a space, and then let people take it where they want to in their own parish life.
Okay.
So women are hungry for those kinds of groups.
Yeah, absolutely. So you need to mark your calendar. Talk to Maria after conference.
Okay, I will do.
I mean, where will that conference be?
It's in Albuquerque this year.
Albuquerque.
So it is, and it's the last week in June. So I think, you know, I think July 1, it's finished.
I want to know how that,
when I come home.
I must know how the priest's conference went. This is Maria breaking in to say I touched base with Deb about how that priest's conference went, and she tells me that the assembly had many good proposals, but this is the first time they're taking up the issue of the status of women in the Catholic Church. When the whole assembly voted, the issue of women in the church came up as the number two priority. Just above it was reform of seminary formation programs, which also closely relates to the status of women, says Deb. We'll be talking at some length about the conference in a future episode. Back now with more from Deb.
And the other thing I want to mention to you, that because many of the priests that we talked with were from the United States and from this association of U.S. Catholic priests, they have raised women's equality and women's participation in the church way up on their list of issues this year.
Wow.
For the first time.
Really?
So it's up there toward the top. Yep, yep. So it is having effect already, and we haven't even really gotten into doing them. So they are being, you know, made more aware of this issue, and they are responding beautifully, I think. So,
well, they may be seeing the church dying on the vine if they don't figure something out.
Yeah, this group of men do. I mean, they understand that that we have a dying church as it was formed, and that whatever is going to take its place is going to look very different than what we have right now. So,
what do I hear in the background? It sounds like music.
Yeah, there is. We've walked away from the lunch that we're having. It's beautiful, sort of, as they call it, they've taken us back to the 60s and 70s here culturally to show us what was happening in Slovakia at the time. And we're going to have a retro beer with our our goulash.
Oh, okay. I don't want to keep you from that.
Did you want to talk to Tony Fannery?
I do.
He's a priest from Iowa.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Hold that thought, though. I have just another question.
Okay.
So I'm noticing that priests are the focus as opposed to bishops. Are we considering the bishops to be a lost cause?
No.
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 Oh, okay.
No, we're still in. No, no. Everything that we do is going to go in one form or another to the bishops and up the chain. We want our preliminary results to go to the Synod of Bishops, the head of the Synod of Bishops. We want them to get as much information about what women are thinking as they look, especially at the Synod on the Youth.
I'm just projecting my own, you know, opinion of bishops.
No, no, no. Well, it's a harder nut to crack, as they say, but we are not quitting on that part as well.
And so just briefly, tell me,
want them to know.
This moment in the 80s, when things were, when the clerics were listening to women, that went by me. what are you referring
to? You probably remember they were working on a pastoral on women, a pastoral letter on women. And the first iteration of it was very strong. And then Rome got involved. John Paul II got involved. And it came back and they wouldn't approve it. And so they came back with modifications. So iteration number two was watered down, much weaker. And Rome still wouldn't approve it. And so came back with a third iteration. And it was so bad that the bishops decided to bury it because it would be so offensive to the women that they had come to talk to and meet and know. So it never happened, thank God.
Yeah.
Because what would have come out of it would have been, you know, horrific for women. So they had enough sense to do that.
I can only imagine. I mean, did it make things worse for women in the church? It couldn't be worse.
Well, a pastoral document in the final iteration would have made it much worse. So I think the sign of life was the bishops were not going to allow the Vatican to have that much influence in it. They would rather just kill the baby than let the Vatican sort of make it over. So,
I'm just curious.
So that's good news when you have an interfering central authority. So.
Can you give me one example of what the pastoral would have accomplished, and I use the word.
So you're going to have to let me go back and look at the document.
Oh, okay,
so,
that's all right. That's okay.
Yeah, yeah,
I get off on these little tangents.
I know.
Well, always a pleasure, Deb. And
all right,
like I say, every
Thanks,
time
Maria.
I talk to you, I come away somehow hopeful against all evidence of hopefulness. So
well,
thank you.
That's what we do.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks.
Okay.
You're tuned to a phone conversation during a break in a church reform conference in Slovakia with three church reformers, Kate McElwee of the Women's Ordination Conference, Deb Rose Milovec of Future Church, and Redemptorist priest Father Tony Flannery, who's no longer allowed to minister. This is Reasonably Catholic, Keeping the Faith, coming to you from WESU, 88.1 FM, Middletown, providing community radio that matters. Back in a moment with more.
So, you know, I'm a dog, and I'm kind of new to this family, but I've noticed a trend. My humans do this thing where they go around and get all my toys and hide them in this basket, but it's always the same basket, and it's always the same place, and then they act so surprised when I find them, but I'm like, hello, that's where you put it last time. Humans are the worst at hide-and-go-seek.
A person is the best thing to happen to a shelter pet. Be that person. Adopt. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org.
I don't care whether they're old or young. When the chips were down, they had trouble, Lord. I guess you hear me talking to you. I don't bite my tongue. You wanna...
Hello?
Hello, Father.
You know, hi, how are you?
Well, you and I talked before. Do you remember? It was 2 years ago.
Did we?
Yes, we did. We talked when you were with the Jubilee for Women Priests event in Rome.
Ah, yes, I do now. I do indeed.
Yes.
Oh, lovely talking to you again.
Same here. So, first of all, bless your heart for your work. I know you've suffered some great loss as a result of it. You are no longer able to... Supposedly.
No, I'm no longer allowed to minister publicly in the church. That's correct. That's
wow.
The case for the last 6 years. Yeah.
How long?
6 years.
Wow.
Since 2012.
Okay.
Yeah.
How's that going
and
for
mainly,
you?
I'm sure it's going fine at this stage. Life has moved on for me. I'm not young anymore. I've definitely passed retirement age. And... in a lot of ways, I'm having a good life.
Yeah.
I'm very involved in church reform work, both in Ireland and internationally, and I don't have any complaints.
Wow. So in a way, you're freed to do this work.
Exactly, and freed to speak my mind and my truth in any way that I wish. So there's value in it too. There's a sadness about it, of course, and there's the sadness that the church institution, the authorities, aren't capable of dealing with people with alternative views to them, and that the only way they can do it is by this type of punishment.
Yeah.
But, you know, and I'm just one of many, many people. There are many in the United States. You probably know similar situation to myself. But it's a loss to the church that
Absolutely.
The alternative voices
yes.
have been silenced. But things are changing now under Pope Francis.
Well, from your mouth to God's ears, I just interviewed someone who likes Pope Francis only because he's all talk and no action.
I don't agree with that now.
Okay.
I think Francis has changed the whole mood and atmosphere in the church and has created an atmosphere now in which there's much more open discussion and freedom of thought and freedom of speech than there was in the past.
Yes.
And I think that's a magnificent change. So
absolutely.
I'd be very happy with that.
Yes, it's an important start. So
exactly.
I can't not talk about Ireland, if only briefly, just to get your reaction to the seismic vote there recently. I'm sure you were following it closely. Were you there? Were you in Ireland?
Well, oh, I was indeed. I was indeed, yes, and cast my vote, as everybody else did. We had quite a high turnout for that referendum. And I think the opinion polls indicated in advance that the yes, I don't know what people understand in this, the referendum was to remove a clause from the constitution. We have a constitution in Ireland, to remove a clause which forbade contraception, forbade abortion in almost every circumstance.
Yeah.
And to allow the legislators to make decisions about when abortion was permissible. So those who voted no wanted to retain the clause in the Constitution, and the Church was very strongly in favour of that.
Right.
And those who voted yes wanted to take the clause out of the Constitution and give the freedom to the legislature to decide it. And while the opinion polls indicated that the yes side was going to win, we all expected it to be quite narrow, and we weren't sure. As it turned out, it was a massive 2-1 victory for the yes side.
A landslide, yeah.
And the other very interesting thing about that, of course, was that a large proportion of church-going Catholics voted yes.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, they ignored the direction of their bishops and, in a lot of cases, of their local priests. And they went out and voted for the removal of the clause. They'd create quite a stir in our little country.
Yes, I can imagine. And I wonder how many of your brethren priests voted yes.
I don't know, because people tended to keep quiet about what they were doing.
Sure.
And that's why we were all unsure how it would turn out. My guess is that few enough of the priests voted yes.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say they by and large voted no, because they feared that if this clause was taken out, there would be far more abortions happening, and that was their obstacle, which was a valid point too. You see, it was one of these referendums where you could equally argue both sides, and I think a lot of us spent a lot of time reflecting and thinking and reading and studying the whole thing, and those of us who praying about it before we made our final decision. So very interesting in that way.
Yes. Well, it's only what we should expect of not just priests, but everyone.
Exactly, yes. And I meant that to imply that everybody was doing it, not just priests.
Right.
It's a difficult one now for the Catholic Church in Ireland. I mean, a lot of things have been difficult. Of things have been difficult for the Catholic Church in Ireland. But now, this is a real indication that the people have moved away.
Yes.
They no longer are taking the direction, while still a fair majority, a fair minority of them are going to church. They are in their thinking and in their actions, they're much more independent of the church than they were in the past.
Yeah, something's going on in Ireland. It's fascinating.
Oh, very much. This only came 2 or 3 years after we had a large majority voting for same-sex marriage. It was strongly opposed by the Catholic Church, but the people gave a large majority in its favor. So, yes, Ireland is changing to an extraordinary extent. We're no longer the island of saints and scholars. It was the traditional name for Ireland.
Yes, so interesting. Well, I told someone in my interview with someone immediately after the vote, I told her that I knew something was afoot in Ireland when they banned smoking in the pubs.
Yes, indeed, you're perfectly right. But that went out. We were all amazed at how successful that was.
It's like, wow, what's going on?
And now it would be socially completely out of order for somebody to start smoking in indeed in any public place.
Yeah.
So that worked really, really well, and it was a good addition to our life.
Yes. So turning our attention to listening to women, I was driving over here. It's morning here. It's afternoon there. I don't know. Maybe I needed a second cup of coffee, but I was grumpy, I guess. And I was thinking, listening to women, you know, how can this help but fail? Since the people who need to listen to women, these priests, they signed up for this job knowing that women were not fully equal in the organization. It feels almost yes. hopeless to expect people who signed on to this, knowing that, to care about anything women have to say.
Yeah, I think that's a very fair comment. On the other hand, like I was ordained when back in 1974, there are a lot of things that I would have signed on to then that I would not sign on to now. Life changes us and opens our minds and our attitudes, and I think that is happening to some extent. But you're perfectly right, it is a problem for priests. See, I think we were trained as priests to be good listeners when somebody comes to us with a problem or trouble in their lives or that sort of thing. But we were never trained to be good listeners when people come to us with alternative points of view and alternative opinions.
Fascinating.
We tend to be dogmatic and we tend to be argumentative, and I see it constantly even among us. So you're perfectly right. This is an enormous change. But at the same time, the equality of women is increasingly one of the central issues that the church has to face.
Yeah.
Because it's happening all over society.
Yes.
And the longer the church continues to discriminate so openly and blatantly against women, it will just become more and more marginalized.
Well,
and even, you know, just referring back briefly to the referendum vote in Ireland, the amount of young women who came home from living out foreign to vote in the referendum.
Yeah.
And they weren't concerned about the church. They were a new generation who in their own lives have achieved equality in their business life, in their relationships and whatever. They have no interest in an institution that openly discriminates against them. And the church
right.
cannot continue like that and survive.
Well, when I heard that you would be coming on the program, I rummaged up some of your comments from our first conversation, and this is what you said. Unless the church fully embraces the full equality of women, it will cease to exist as anything important in the world. You said in Ireland...
Absolutely.
Sorry, go on.
Go ahead. No, go ahead, Jess.
And you said, I have two other quotes which I bullet pointed in the... on the website. In Ireland, the priesthood as we know it is particularly dead.
Yes.
And finally, you said, the collapse of the system has to get much more advanced for the new model of ministry based on equality to come about. I mean, it was a kind of apocalyptic view of what needs to happen.
One should never have one's quotes thrown back at them. absolutely agree with the first one, because I've already said it here, the equality of women is central to the future of the church. Priesthood in Ireland, the average age of priests in Ireland at this stage is either 71 or 72.
Oh, no.
There are only a bare handful of young men entering the priesthood. Nothing like enough to continue the ministry as we have it now. I must have been in a particularly depressing mood when I said the third one.
That's great. And then do you really believe the church as a system needs to collapse in order for something new to come out of the ashes?
That's what I mean. I must have been in a bad mood.
Oh, that one.
But not really. See... there are so many challenges facing the church as an institution, and so far, certainly up to the time Pope Francis came in, the reaction of the institution is to dig in and to hold on to what it has got. And then there comes a point in an institution when it can no longer do that because the whole thing is falling apart all around it, and that is the point at which it has to face the reality. Now, the institutional church, meaning the authorities, bishops and the Vatican in particular, haven't quite got to that stage. I believe Pope Francis has got to that stage. He realizes the situation, but his hands are tied also. So maybe the situation has to get much worse in terms of priests and in terms of women and lots of in terms of teaching, to sexual teaching in particular, for the church to realize this cannot continue, the official church. Yeah. So maybe in that situation too, things have to get worse before they get better.
Yes, yes.
It's just sad, but there you go.
Are you familiar with Gary Will's book, Why Priests?
I am indeed, yes.
Do you think of that? He posits that really the priesthood is kind of irrelevant and unnecessary. What do you say to that?
Priesthood as we understand it now, meaning this male celibate institution with particular functions, and especially this notion of the priest being in some way a superior being to the ordinary faithful. You know, the teaching that says that when you become ordained as a priest, you're ontologically changed. That's the phrase they use. In other words, you take on a new being.
Yeah.
Now, that's a terribly dangerous teaching because that's a recipe for the feelings of superiority and control. So all of that, I think, has to change.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to get back. In the early church, the people in charge of the churches, there were different names for them at the time. The constant emphasis was, you were there to serve, not to control.
Mm-hmm.
And increasingly, as the church got bigger and more institutionalized, power and control entered into it.
Yeah.
And it's very hard to rid any institution because the desire for control is very deep in human beings.
Interesting.
But that's what I would hope for, and that's what I long for and pray for, that the day will come when we will have a model of priesthood that sees itself as in the service of the community. And that's bringing you back to what the ladies were saying to you. Priests who listen to the women and really listen to them. That should be fundamental in the priesthood of the future, not just listening to women, listening to everybody and being at the service of everybody.
And not just to their problems, but to their challenges.
Not exactly.
Yeah.
Yes. Listening to their problems is the easy bit. But listening to their challenges, listening to their what they want the church to be for them.
Yes.
Yes.
This has been wonderful yet again. Thank you,
Father. Lovely talking to you.
Always a pleasure.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
That was a phone chat with silenced Redemptorist priest Father Tony Flannery. We started off the episode with a conversation with Kate McElwee of the Women's Ordination Conference and then Deb Rose Milovec of Future Church. If you missed any of the episode, you can find it archived later tonight at reasonablycatholic.com. Next week, we'll talk with author Blanche McCrary Boyd. Thanks to everyone who donated to WESU's Spring Pledge Drive. We made our goal. Thanks to you. It's you who put the community in community radio. Now stay tuned for The Jive at 5, followed by Wonderland with DJ Cheshire Cat.